Welcome back to the Deep Dive. Today, we're tackling something really high stakes. Labor disputes.
That's right.
Specifically, when things move past negotiation into actual strike action. Now, the usual advice is, you know, lawyers and contingency staff.
Right, focus on the operations.
But the research we've looked at, it tells a completely different story. Communication, it turns out, might just be the single most decisive factor.
It really is. It's fascinating how quickly the actual conflict itself becomes secondary to the story around it. The core problem isn't always the empty workstations. It's the information vacuum. Yeah. We see it again and again, silence. It just breeds speculation.
And bad communication breeds mistrust, right?
Exactly. The companies that navigate these things best, the ones that recover fastest, they prepared their communication strategy. That was their real continuity plan.
Okay, so that's our mission for this deep dive then. We're going to look at the three distinct communication fronts an organization has to manage all at once.
Get one wrong and the whole thing can wobble.
Yeah. You've got customers needing confidence. You've got the unions demanding respect and, well, transparency.
And then maybe the toughest part, your internal staff. They need stability, clarity, protection from all the noise and misinformation.
Right. Let's unpack this, starting with the people outside the building. The customers. So when a strike hits, customers, I mean, understandably, they don't care about the drama.
No, they just want their stuff, service delivery.
Exactly. So the sources you reviewed emphasize that the goal isn't about winning some PR war against the union. It's much simpler. It's about reinforcing just three basic truths for your customers. One, we're still open, we're operational.
Okay.
Two, we're taking concrete steps to keep service quality up. And three, we respect our workforce and we are working towards a fair resolution.
And the timing here is just brutal. That first 24 hours, absolutely critical for shaping how people see this.
You mean customer specific?
Customers, the public, everyone. If you're slow, if you seem reactive, it suggests chaos, disorganization, like you were caught totally flat-footed.
Whereas being proactive signals control, professionalism.
Precisely. So that pre-drafted plan needs to kick in instantly. Press statement focused purely on continuity.
Okay.
Customer email, maybe a portal update, just acknowledging what's happening, and a website banner that gets refreshed, like constantly.
But hang on, let's push back on that a bit. Does just saying everything's fine always work?
Yeah, good point.
I mean, if a company says full continuity guaranteed, and then bam, deliveries halt the next day, doesn't that make things even worse?
It absolutely can. And that's where generic crisis advice kind of falls down. What the successful companies learn is, well, customers often handle specific partial truth better than a big promise that breaks.
So instead of business as usual,
you communicate facts, not, you know, false hoax. Acknowledge facility X is impacted, but orders are being rerouted through facility Y.
Or expect slight delays. Here's the updated window.
Exactly. Customers care about the impact on them, not the internal politics. Honesty there, even if it's about a partial disruption, builds way more long-term trust.
And the language used is crucial here, isn't it? Getting rid of the corporate speak.
Oh, absolutely. Ditch the jargon, no industrial action, no collective bargaining impasse.
Temporary staffing solutions.
Yeah.
Right.
Keep it plain, respectful. A good structure is simple. What's happening, briefly? What are we doing about it, mitigation? What can you expect next? That clarity dials down the anxiety.
Okay, but this message, it's not just coming from the top brass, is it? It's the people on the phones, the sales reps.
They become the voice of the company, effectively. Your frontline.
So how do you get them ready? Fast. They're going to get hit with a wave of anxious calls.
They need tools, not just a memo. Detailed internal FAQs, pre-approved message templates so everyone's saying the same thing, and clear rules on when to escalate a tricky call.
Avoids those inconsistent messages that kill confidence.
Instantly. And one really critical point when training them, emphasize respecting the striking workers even while managing customer expectations. Customers often sympathize with labor, you know?
Yeah, that makes sense. Sounding dismissive would backfire badly.
Faster than a missed delivery. Yes. Damages the brand itself. Okay, shifting gears now to the union itself. Communicating with union leadership is maybe the most delicate balancing act.
How so?
Because the tone you set outside the formal negotiating room, it massively influences what happens inside that room. You earn credibility with honesty, with consistency, with professionalism, even when things are tense.
Right, and here's that tightrope walk you mentioned. Transparency. But without giving ground on the actual negotiation points.
Exactly.
You have to be super precise, separating the bargaining details from what you say publicly. Why is it such a legal minefield to, say, publicly debate the offer on the table?
Well, you risk blowing up the whole good faith bargaining process. If you go public saying the union rejected our fair and generous offer, you're basically negotiating through the media.
Oh, okay.
That poisons the well. And it can lead to legal challenges like unfair labor practice charges, arguing you're not bargaining in good faith.
So the professional approach is more like,
keep it factual and process oriented. Negotiations are ongoing. Both sides continue to work towards a fair resolution. Something like that. It acknowledges the dispute, but protects the actual negotiation space.
Got it. But what if the union puts out a statement with specific, maybe exaggerated claims, like, say, about unsafe conditions, and the company knows the facts are different? You can't just stay silent then, surely.
No, you can't. That's a critical pressure point. Your response needs to be fast, coordinated, and stick strictly to the facts, but without debating the union's demand.
So how does that work in practice?
You correct the public record factually. For instance, our safety records confirm compliance with all regulations and recent inspections show XYZ. But you don't get drawn into arguing about their proposal for, say, a new safety committee structure. That's a bargaining item.
Keep it separate. One authorized voice, monitor channels, correct the facts calmly.
Exactly. Never get dragged into an emotional tit-for-tat online or in the media.
You mentioned union leaders are the main channel to the workforce. If you just cut off informal communication, doesn't that just let rumors run wild among employees?
Absolutely. Shutting down channels is like handing a megaphone to the rumor mill. The goal isn't constant chatter, but consistent professional contact points.
Like scheduled check-ins, documenting things.
Yes. It maintains a level of professional decorum. And successful strategies often subtly reinforce shared values, you know, reminding everyone subtly that the long-term goals are shared. Safe workplace, stable jobs, things like that. It grounds the discussion.
Keeps it from becoming purely personal conflict.
Right. You're communicating stability, not desperation or hostility.
And given unions often get their message out first, companies need pre-approved responses ready to go. Right. So they don't look reactive.
Vital. Absolutely vital. Management's response has to be measured, calm, never dismissive. If the union comes out strong, your reply should be a steady confirmation that talks are happening, highlighting commitment to employees and continuity. No scrambling.
Okay, let's turn inwards now. The internal audience. This feels like where things can either really stabilize or completely unravel.
It's make or break internally. If your non-striking workforce is poorly informed, confused, scared, engagement just plummets, and the operational challenge gets 10 times harder.
So what's step one for internal comms?
The first non-negotiable step is simple. Acknowledge the reality. Don't pretend the strike isn't happening or isn't a big deal.
Because everyone knows it is.
Exactly. Trying to downplay it, it just shreds internal credibility immediately. A straightforward, calm acknowledgement from leadership sets the right tone. Something like, we understand this is a difficult, stressful time for everyone across the organization.
Okay, but the second that happens, the rumor mill inside starts churning like crazy, doesn't it?
Yeah.
How do you stop that? How do you centralize things?
Centralization is absolutely key. You need one single trusted channel, maybe a dedicated page on the internet, a specific email update list. That's the only source of official truth.
Not just repeating the external message, though.
No, it needs more detail internally. Clearly state what's changed operationally, what hasn't changed, like pay or benefits for non-striking staff. That's critical. And crucially, provide a safe, confidential way for employees to ask questions.
Without fear of sticking their neck out.
Precisely.
We also need to talk about psychological safety. Strikes create enormous tension. Striking versus non-striking colleagues.
It can get really ugly, and it's a massive productivity killer. Leadership has to be proactive here. Communicate a strict zero-tolerance policy for any harassment or intimidation, period, on either side.
Okay.
But beyond that, leaders need to project calm authority. People are looking to them for stability, especially those picking up extra work. The tone needs empathy, acknowledging the stress, but also clear direction.
Like, we know this is tough, but we're focused on X, and we appreciate everyone pulling together.
Exactly that blend. It builds loyalty, weirdly enough, even in a crisis. Shows you understand the human cost, but are still steering the ship.
And this message, it can't just come from HQ emails.
Yeah.
It has to come from direct managers, supervisors.
Who are often the least prepared.
Right.
So equipping your managers is non-negotiable. They need toolkits, talking points, maybe templates for having difficult one-on-one conversations, and FAQs that directly answer that number one question everyone has.
What does this mean for me?
That's the one. If managers are just winging it, making up answers, your carefully crafted message fractures into 1,000 pieces overnight. Consistency for managers is paramount.
Okay, so we've got the three big fronts. Customers need confidence, unions need professional dialogue, internal staff need stability and clarity.
Check.
The real trick, then, is making sure the core story, the underlying narrative, stays consistent across all three, even if the specific messages are tailored.
Synchronization. That's the linchpin. It's that one voice principle, but it doesn't mean saying the exact same words to everyone.
It means the messages support each other.
Exactly. They need to align towards the desired outcome for each group.
Let's quickly recap that. For customers, the message is about operational stability.
Aiming for retention and confidence, keeping them with you.
For the union, it's good faith and consistency.
Aiming for constructive bargaining, showing you're a serious, albeit currently adversarial, partner.
And internally, for staff, it's transparent leadership.
Aiming for cohesion and morale, proving you trust them with information, which builds loyalty under pressure. If any one message undercuts another, say, you tell staff one thing and the union something else, the whole strategy fails.
Getting that level of coordination must require a central hub.
It does. You need what's often called a communication command center. Basically, a cross-functional team, PR, legal, HR, operations working together constantly.
Approving messages, monitoring sentiment.
Catching contradictions before they go public. It's intense but necessary.
And hovering over all of this is the legal aspect, labor law. Our sources really stress how carefully you have to tread here.
Oh, absolutely. Every communication, internal and external, sits under a legal microscope. Compliance needs precision. You can't afford silence, but careless words are even riskier.
So legal review is mandatory before anything goes out.
Everything. Key risks are around unfair labor practices. You absolutely cannot discuss specific bargaining positions publicly or make threats implicitly or explicitly.
There was a really crucial point about replacement workers.
Yes, this is huge. When you bring in temporary or replacement workers to keep operations going, you must never describe them or frame them as permanent solutions.
Why is that specific wording so dangerous? What's the legal trap there?
It directly impacts the reinstatement rights of striking workers under labor law, like the NLRA in the U.S. Implying or stating that strikers have been permanently replaced can be seen as illegally interfering with their right to strike and their job security once a dispute ends.
Wow. Okay. So precision in language isn't just good practice. It's a legal shield.
It's absolutely essential. Non-negotiable.
Which ramps up the pressure for media interactions. You need that legally sound instant response ready.
Preparation is everything. You need, say, 3 pre-approved key talking points focused on continuity, respect for the process, commitment to resolution, ready to go. Ideally with a quote from a senior leader already signed off.
And social media. That could be a minefield.
The mandate there has to be calm and corrective. Avoid getting sucked into debates. Politely correct factual errors with links to official statements as possible, but do not engage emotionally. Maintain that measured professional tone.
Okay, so fast forward. Hopefully resolution is reached. The strike ends. The communication job isn't over, though, is it?
Not at all. It shifts gear from crisis management to recovery. Think, repair, reinforce, reintegrate.
What does that look like communicatively?
First, announce the resolution clearly and publicly. Signal closure. Internally, a really strong unifying message is needed. Thank all staff, those who struck, those who didn't, to start rebuilding bridges immediately.
Okay. Focus on unity.
And then critically, do a formal postmortem. Gather lessons learned. Were managers properly equipped? Did the communication channels work? Was the framework effective? That feedback loop is gold for building resilience for whatever comes next. Hashtag tag outro.
So if we boil this all down, the core philosophy seems to be that strike communication is, well, fundamentally about people.
It is, and leadership needs to find that tricky balance between empathy and authority.
Empathy meaning acknowledging the difficulty.
Exactly. Acknowledging the human impact, the stress, the disruption, but without losing control. You still need to show clear, consistent direction through the crisis. Empathy isn't weakness here. It's acknowledging reality.
Right. So the big takeaway from this deep dive seems to be, communication isn't just something you do during a strike. It's the continuity plan.
It's the invisible infrastructure holding things together.
Every message, every update, even under fire, is a chance to either build or erode trust, with customers, with unions, and maybe most importantly, with your own people.
Which brings us to a final thought, something for you, our listeners, to consider. Moving from just reacting when a crisis hits to being truly ready beforehand, that requires building this communication framework long-term, preemptively. So the question is, how does making that investment, that preparation, transform crisis communication? Does it just become damage control? Or can it actually become a strategic asset that builds genuine institutional resilience, making you stronger for any future challenge?
Something to definitely think about. We'll leave you with that question. Thanks for diving deep with us today.